Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathleen O., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Friday, January 11th, 2019, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are at page XXVIII, the fourth paragraph, Men and Women Drink Essentially, through two sentences ending Differentiate the True from the False. And we'll be commenting on those two sentences only. Today's readers are Mariana D. for the 12 Steps, Cecilia H. for the 12 Traditions, and the readers of our text are Pia S., Julie E. B., and Jordan L. The share ID for Thursday, January 10th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 12,406. That's 12406. And for this morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Time, is 12,409. That's 12409. Our newcomer greeter for today is Melanie C. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. And someone's unmuted, so if you could press star one to mute, please. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive eating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I'll now ask Mariana D. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning. This is Mariana D. from Oregon. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Mariana. And Cecilia H., would you please read the 12 traditions?
Good morning. This is Cecilia H. I'm a compulsive overeater from Pittsburgh. I'm grateful for my daily reprieve. These are the 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personality. I pass.
And thank you, Cecilia. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phones except the speakers should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page XXVIII, the fourth paragraph, Men and Women Drink Essentially, through two sentences ending with differentiate the true from the false, and we'll be commenting on these two sentences only. So, Pia S., good morning. Could you get us started, please?
Yes. Thank you, Kathleen, for your service. This is Pia. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Parkland, Florida. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the truth from the false. And this part of the doctor's opinion was new to me when I came in to program. I hadn't heard about the effect before. So this reading reminds me of how I chase the effect. The high that I get starts actually before I start eating my binge foods. It starts when I start thinking about going to the store, on my way to the store. When I'm putting things into my shopping cart, I get a sensation. I get some ease and comfort already there. And I crave not just the taste of the food, but the effect the food gives me. I crave ease and comfort. And even though I have been hurt time and time again, I still go there. And I think, you know, this time it will be okay to eat my allergic food. So I have to work the steps to get that ease and comfort. And I have to go to God. God has to be the ultimate source for ease and comfort. My higher power gives me guidance, gives me direction. In disease, I cannot differentiate the truth from the false. And this connection that I have now with my higher power shows me the truth about myself and the world around me. I get out of my fear and paranoia and self-centeredness, and I see the world that it's not just all about what I can get, but it's about what I can give to others. And the steps helped me clear away all the debris in my life, so I can see the truth more clearly. Thank you, Kathleen. With that, I'll pass.
And thank you, Pia. Okay, who would like to share on these two sentences?
Lisa J.R.
Julie J.D.
Donna B.
Cindy D.
Trey E.
Melanie C.
Okay, hold on one second. Okay, here's what I got. And there's someone between Julie, they were real early in after Julie E.B., and I want to, do you remember who that was? Can you tell me your name?
Ida A.
Okay. Okay, so here's who I have. Lisa J.R., Julie E.B., Ida A., Donna B., Cindy, I'll need your last initial, Trey, I'll need your last initial, and Melanie C. Okay, that's what I've got. Sorry if I missed you. We'll get the rest of you when we do the second set. So Lisa J.R., go ahead. You'll be followed by Julie E.B.
Good morning, everybody. Lisa J.R. here from Baltimore, Maryland. Thank you so much for your service, and thanks for being on the line, everyone. We drink because we like the effect. Well, wow. That says it all. You know, the effect for me was, you know, akin to something spiritual. I was am a greedy person by nature. Maybe that comes from being, you know, the middle kid of six kids. You know, but there was something that happened to me when I was restless, irritable, or discontent, when I took that one bite, or even as the previous person shared, when I was thinking about taking that first bite. You know, it's like a switch. I love what Paul Newman said in A Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. You know, it's like a switch clicking off in my head. It turns off the hot light and it turns on the cool light, and all of a sudden there's peace. Well, that's exactly what the effect of food was doing for me. But I realized that if I had a loving God, there had to be an opposite. There had to be other false gods that meant for my destruction. And boy, food definitely meant for my destruction. That compulsive eating, food in itself is benign, but that compulsive eating meant my destruction. You know, after a while, it wasn't working. So I had to add other things to it. The disease of more kicked in. If a little is good, more's got to be better, and even more still. So, you know, more shopping, more alcohol, more everything, you know. So I had to come to grips with that, and you guys helped me do that. I sat and listened to you. I read this literature over and over when I started working with people, and still am, and I'm learning every day that it really doesn't matter why I am the way I am. It just matters that now I have a design for living that works in rough going, and it really is my connection with my God, my true God. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Lisa J.R. And Julie E.B., you are up, followed by Ida A. Julie, star one to unmute.
This is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered in Colorado. I'm one of these women who
Julie, there's a lot of background noise. And now I don't hear you at all.
Okay, let's keep trying this here. Is this any better?
Okay. Yeah, there's like a fluttering in the background, but go ahead.
Okay. This is Julie E.B., and I'll pass for now. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Julie. Sorry, there's just a lot of background noise. I'm not sure what that is. I'll come back to you at the end after Melanie C. if you want. So Ida A., go ahead, followed by Donna B.
Thanks, Kathleen. Ida A. here. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, wonderful visionaries. And you have blessed me all year with your shares and getting into the big book. I am so grateful to understand this effect term now, which I didn't for over 50 years. In fact, I think for over 50 years, I've loved, I've worshiped, I've adored, I've cherished everything to do with my alcoholic foods. That effect produced by my alcoholic foods has been what I've worshiped. And I think as a young child, I wanted a creator who loved me, who kept me safe, and probably before I reached double digits, I just decided food was better. Food took the edge off. And over the course of this last year, I realized I have wasted half a century. I just wasted so much time, so much time. And I remember reading How It Works and knowing deep in my heart, I was not constitutionally capable of being honest. And today I know that's not true. Today I know that's not true. I know I get it wrong a lot. And I know today and the next day and the next day, I'm going to make tons of mistakes. And the people that love me are okay with that. But I got a program. Just like they say, the design for living. That is so true. These principles and the daily showing up has changed me. It's changed my relationship with my son. He will say I'm a nicer person. That means everything to me. This program works. So if anybody's out there eating food, listening to this meeting, which I did, the food gets in the way. The food gets in the way, and you are worth so much more. Thank you all for being here. Blessings.
And thank you, Ida A. So Donna B., you're up next, followed by Cindy, and I think it's Cindy K. So go ahead, Donna.
This is Donna B., recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic, calling from Denver, Colorado. Thank you for the opportunity to share. For me, it's critical to remember that even while abstinent, my disease makes it difficult for me to tell the difference between true and false. My disease, the mental obsession aspect of it, has the ability to distort my viewpoint on everything so that eating seems like a step up. I'm grateful for steps 10, 11, and 12, especially for giving me the opportunity to address the mental obsession that distorts my thinking and makes it impossible to tell the difference between true and false. In 10, when I'm disturbed, resentful, angry, I have tools to come to the truth by looking at where I've been selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and fearful, and sharing that with my sponsor or with a fellow. And in step 11, it's every day, all day, constantly asking God to redirect my thinking, especially divorcing it from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. And in 12, I get to work with others. And in that experience, I see where their thinking is distorted by the disease, and it's a mirror to see where my thinking is distorted by the disease. Really grateful to be abstinent and to be working this program with all of you, and especially with the people that I have a very close relationship with. Thank you for letting me share.
And thank you, Donna B. So Cindy, you're up next, followed by Trey. And is it Cindy K?
Hi, it's actually Cindy D.
Cindy D, sorry, Cindy, go ahead.
That's okay. Cindy D is gratefully recovered in Texas. And I want to focus on the part that says, you know, after a time we cannot differentiate the true from the false. And, you know, this was the sentence that I still feel got me to start working the steps and really got me to recovery. And, I learned that the very first day I was talking to some of you fellows on the phone that even, you know, in my disease, I didn't know whether I was willing or not willing to work the program. But after reading this with someone and talking about it, I decided, you know, what did I have to lose? Because I didn't know. And so I started working the steps, and I started working them with everything I had. And for me, what's true is that when I eat certain things, I get a reaction in my body that's not normal, and it creates that phenomenon of craving, and I can't control it, and I can't think about anything else but fulfilling that need that just grows and grows in me when I do that. And it's also true for me that I can't control people, places, or things. And, you know, now that I have neutrality on the food, I'm learning more and more about that aspect of my disease and you know, how I try to manipulate or control or manage the people in my life and my relationships. And the false is, for me, the consequences and the behaviors of, you know, thinking that I can control those things, that I can stop whenever I want, that, you know, that it's normal. Those are the falseness of our disease. And it's true that, you know, when I'm in that state, I am restless, irritable, and discontent. And like one of my fellows just said, working 10 steps, you know, every day to deal with those feelings is what keeps me in the peace and the serenity and the calmness of this program. So the truth for me is this program, the truth is that I can be honest now where I couldn't before with myself or with anyone else. And the false is that, you know, there's one more chance or there's one more thing I can try. I can't do this alone, and that's the absolute truth. I need my fellows, and I need God more than anything else. And for those that are out there that are still struggling, there really is an answer here. That's the truth. That's the truth for me, and I hope that you find that as well. Thanks, Kathleen, and I'll pass.
And thank you, Cindy D. So, Trey, you're up next, followed by Melanie C. And, Trey, what's the first initial of your last name? Are you there, Trey? Star one to unmute.
Yes, it's E.
E. Okay, go ahead, e. Trey. Thank you.
Okay, hi, guys. My name's Trey E. I'm in Fresno, California. This is actually my first time sharing on the line, so I'm really excited. I just finished working step one, and so, you know, I read this section, and it really, really helped me understand what was going on with me. You know, it wasn't just food for me, it was anything. It was anything, I don't know, I have a very acute fear of being uncomfortable. Like even a little bit uncomfortable. I have zero tolerance for any kind of uncomfortability. My husband calls it a low frustration tolerance, but really it's just, you know, if I lost my keys, I would flip out. If I got lost and didn't know which made a wrong turn, I would flip out. Super high strung. And, you know, the food just wasn't working anymore. Nothing was working anymore. And I was just constantly seeking ease and comfort, seeking ease and comfort. And, you know, nothing works for me anymore. I feel like I had a little plug and I was holding like this little plug and I was going around trying to plug it into all these power sources and none of them had any juice. And so when I read this and my sponsor explained to me about the effect that I was chasing, it was like the light bulb went on and, it was just amazing to me. I feel very comfortable now, even though I don't have my food, because I'm working through the steps. And it's amazing to me. I've had a series of things happen this week that normally would just completely push me over the top. And, you know, because of this program, because of these steps, and specifically because of a vision for you and the way that you guys go line through line and just break it down so clearly, I feel like I finally understand what I've been doing my whole life since I was little, like looking for, you know, ease and comfort. And so I'm just so grateful to have that information. It's vital for me, and it just really changed. It was a game changer. So this passage was so powerful for me, and I'm just really, really, really grateful that I'm not in the food today, that I'm not eating my alcoholic foods or shopping compulsively or any of that stuff. There's just, you know, there's no more comfort in that for me. So there's only kind of one way left, one way for me to go forward, and that's the solution. So thank you. With that, I'll pass.
And thank you, Trey E. Okay, Melanie C., you're up next, and I'm going to see if Julie E. B. is on the back on. And just a reminder, we are on page XXVIII, the fourth paragraph, Men and Women Drink Essentially, reading through two sentences ending with differentiate the true from the false. So Melanie C., go ahead, please.
Hey, thank you, Kathleen O. Good morning, everyone. My name is Melanie C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm in Wilsonville, Oregon. I was thinking about an experience, a body experience, as folks were sharing today and reading these two paragraphs. First, there was an evolution to coming to this idea. I didn't understand it at all in the beginning. Matter of fact, I sort of disputed it and refuted it because I was just convinced, and this is kind of the evolution, I was convinced that I had just this extra love for food that was different than anybody else around me. And they had some sort of something mechanism within them that even though they felt like I did and wanted food like I did, they had the power to stop it and I didn't. But here's the truth from the false, kind of an image, I think, anyway. And I'm back and forth about this debate. I'm not going to pick up. Yes, I'm going to pick up. No, I'm not going to pick up. Yes, I'm no, whatever that one is. And I am completely, completely drenched in this experience that my body is now involved and I'm shaking inside because I am at the threshold of the family room going into the kitchen area, my hands on the one side of the refrigerator, the other on the countertop, and I'm shaking. I'm not going to go in here. I am not going to go in here. And I go in there because I have now just kind of bought into an idea that I can buy some sort of hope in that tomorrow it'll be different or the next meal will be different and I'll just do it for now. Now, that's not hunger. But I couldn't tell myself it wasn't hunger. That's not, a mealtime and somebody goes, I can't imagine my neighbor or the neighbor over there, all of us standing at that door like that at some point in our day doing that sort of thing. I couldn't tell the truth from the false. I couldn't understand I was chasing the effect of. It didn't come through my head. And I think at this particular point, it had everything to do with the blackout, brownout state that I was living in, and I had to elevate the power of this food on my mind. I could no longer stay in that place that said that I had any normal reaction to this deal. I had to elevate it. It was powerful. I couldn't think, and I was telling myself all kinds of things that I felt like I could live with, and I could not keep myself from putting my hand on that hot fire. Couldn't do it. However many times I was burned, it was gone, it was missing, it was broken. And that's startling to me. And then my sponsor eventually taught me, and I was able to see through the vicious cycle that we read about here, is that it's a recoiling thing. I mean, it's a circular thing that continues when I have this emotion and there's an effect that I have to get. Whether I believed it or not, it was happening. And when I wrote it out, I could see that it was happening and God transformed my mind. So I could think like that. That's the stunning thing about this deal. When the food is off, entire absence is there, and I'm just wrapping up here, there is an opportunity for that transformation of thinking so I can see that when I stand at the threshold like that again, what the heck I'm up to. I'm with that, I pass. Thanks.
And thank you, Melanie C. So Julie E.B., are you still there?
This is Julie E.B.
Okay, go ahead, Julie.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., grateful. Compulsive over in undereater in Colorado, and I'm one of these women. I'm glad these women are in here who took this food, who used this substance essentially because I like the effect. I'm one who liked the effect of being over full, and it never felt like enough, and I had to chase that effect further and further. The effect of sitting by the television and at the end of a long day, and then just taking all the feelings I had from something else and filling them up with food. I also liked and chased the effect of undereating, of losing a ton of weight super quick, so fast under, quote, medical management that I ended up losing my uterus as an effect. And why do I mention that? Compulsive exercise. Just couldn't let go. Didn't matter how far I went, how fast I went, how much it hurt me. To have neutrality around those things today is a miracle, and it is possible in this program. The sensation is so elusive that even while they admit it's injurious, lots of times when I couldn't separate the truth from the false, I couldn't even admit it's injurious. And so an early call might be, I picked up because of this life event. I picked up because I was tired. I picked up because of this. I couldn't say I picked up so I felt shame and blame. I picked up so I could pretend that I felt I was okay when I feel so lonely. I couldn't say stopped eating. I don't know what that noise is. That's not me. I stopped eating because I would feel in control. I would feel powerful. I would get validation from other people that I didn't know how to get from a higher power. I couldn't separate the truth from the false and how much I looked to prop up my own will. Nothing else would do that for me at once. And so what did I do? I put down the food with a basic abstinence. I got into the book with my sponsor, and I learned things, particular things, that I could do to keep that abstinence as a place safe and protected. And then I learned how to put down the resentments, the fears, the harms, all the things haunting me that I just couldn't look at before. Someone on the 7 o'clock meeting shared a few weeks ago that their problems, they were like crumpled up paper that they threw in the back seat of the car and could never take it out and look at it. And that's how life just piles up. But I told myself with the food, I could solve it better, that I had a difficult time, so I had to get into the food. That, for me, is the basic lie, not being able to separate the truth from the false. And the truth is that I am a good and precious, growing, unfolding child of the universe. Thanks. Yeah.
And thank you, Julie E.B. So just a reminder, we are on page XXVIII, the fourth paragraph, Men and Women Drink Essentially, through two sentences ending with differentiate the true from the false. And who else would like to share on those two sentences?
Beatrice O.
Ma'am, okay, I heard Beatrice O, and who was after Beatrice O?
Reggie O.
Carrie O. And Mo. Okay, hold on. Reggie O, Mo H, Sherry KB,
Joanne B,
Rita F.
Joanne B, and who was right after Joanne B?
Rita F.
Rita F. Okay, sorry, I'm going to stop right there because I don't want to run out of time here. So, Beatrice O, Reggie O, Mo H, Sherry KB, Joanne B, and Rita F. So go ahead, Beatrice O.
Hi, this is Beatrice O, and I wanted to share about this. That we can't differentiate the true from the false, and that sensation that's so elusive. And one of the reasons that sensation is so elusive is because of the hijacked brain. I never wanted to believe that this was an allergy, but I now know that it was my brain's reward center that needed that food. And there was nothing that I was powerless over that. But, you know, there's a saying that I heard in this program a long time ago. If a horse thief, if an alcoholic is a horse thief and he stops drinking, he's still a horse thief. And I knew that I had to do the work, do the steps, because even though I put down my food, I was still a codependent. I was still a fearful child inside. I was still angry and vengeful and dishonest and self-seeking and unforgiving. And I needed to work these steps to do that self-purification because my brain remembers. My body keeps the score. And when I was sober, I couldn't live my life the way I was living if I didn't work the steps, because I had memories and my body remembers and my hijacked brain. And if I didn't put down the food and change my life, basically, and look at myself, I was never going to be able to stay sober. So it's been layers and layers of, you know, we disclose and discard and get rid of all these behaviors and take a good look at ourselves. I am doing that again. And I can see that there's a lot of things that I thought I had cleared out, but I never really let go. And so, of course, I couldn't differentiate the truth and the false. My brain was being hijacked. And if I continue to put that substance in my body, I was always going to go back to the food. And I remember somebody telling me one time, B, you have to put the food down. Anyway, thank you.
And thank you, Beatrice O. There's a lot of paper rustling in the background, so can everyone please check that their phone is actually unmuted? Okay, so we have Reggie O up next, followed by Mo H. Go ahead, Reggie.
Hey, good morning, Kathleen. Thanks for your service this morning. This is Reggie O out here in Los Angeles area. And, you know, it's been really wonderful hearing everybody share this morning and, you know, taking these two sentences apart. I didn't get this paragraph. I couldn't figure out why this was such an important paragraph. It took me forever to come to terms with this paragraph. And, you know, as I'm looking at it now, it brought me back to many things listening this morning. But I had a memory when I was, you know, I did a history of food once a long time ago in program or history of compulsive eating. And my first memory of compulsive eating was like when I was 4 years old and I was in the back seat of the car with my mom and dad. We'd just gone grocery shopping. The bags were in the back seat and I went into the bags and I pulled out white bread and it was either probably a half gallon of milk. I probably couldn't have picked up a gallon of milk, but it was a large container. And I sat in the back seat and I just balled up the bread, ate one slice after another and guzzled the milk. And so that was my first memory. A couple of years later, there was an addition to it. And the addition was what I was feeling before I did that. And what I was feeling was a great deal of anxiety. What I was feeling upon eating and after the eating was this amazing, and someone earlier shared reminded me of this, was like a spiritual experience. I didn't know what that was as a four-year-old, but the effect, the sensation that I experienced during eating that bread and drinking that milk was really pretty darned amazing. So that has a part to do with the true for the false. And I was reading this writer once, and he said that addicts, people who are addicted, have a real strong drive and desire for spiritual experience, for a spiritual life, and that the effect produced by, I think he was talking about alcohol, that the effect produced by alcohol initially is much like a spiritual experience. The problem with it is that, as we know now, it's like short-lived. It lasts like 7 or 8 seconds. And then there's never enough to bring that experience back, you know, until perhaps the next first bite. But it's never like a spiritual experience because you have to keep going back and going back to attempt to get it. And what we get here, you know, is we get to go through and work the steps. And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And an awakening, I do believe, is different than a spiritual experience. I've had spiritual experiences before, many, but they did not necessarily, you know, mean a spiritual awakening. We get to clear things out and learn, you know, the true is that, you know, there is one God and food was my God in that moment, you know. And so we get to have another power that's greater. And just really appreciate you all and this paragraph this morning. Thank you.
And thank you, Reggie O. So Mo H., you're up next, followed by Sherry KB.
Yes, good morning. This is Mo H., recovered compulsive overeater in Northern California. Oh, so grateful for all the shares this morning. These two sentences, just two sentences, are so powerful. And I heard somebody on the morning meeting say to replace the men and women with I eat, essentially, because I like the effect produced by food. The sensation is so elusive that while I admit it is injurious, I cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. And it wasn't until I took those two sentences into my gut and that they were explained to me by my Ebby about 3 years ago, and I've been in the rooms a long, long time. And it was like, why did I eat? Why did I eat? Well, I wanted the effect. Well, what was the effect? Well, the effect was I felt a sense of ease and comfort, but it didn't last very long, as people have said. And Harlan says, it only lasts for seconds. And then what? Then I need more so I can get that sense of ease and comfort. And as a young person, and I have memories too of young and eating, and my brother and I were dancers, and after every performance, my father, who probably was a compulsive overeater, but he didn't show it on his body, but he really liked sweets, would take us to Gifford's Ice Cream Parlor in Silver Spring, Maryland. I never forgot. And I look forward to that. Every time we went dancing, it wasn't about the dancing. It was about what I was going to have after the dancing. And to get that effect from that little bit of food. And as I grew, it progressed. And I'm reading Dr. Bob's Nightmare again, and I'm seeing how the disease slowly progresses. And I needed more and more and more. And, you know, and then the last time, I just could not get enough. And I had so much shame about my last relapse and binge, but I hit bottom, and I was desperate. I finally got to the point of being desperate and willing to do whatever it took. And so great, great sentences. So thank you for letting me share, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Mo H. Sherry KB, you're up next, followed by Joanne B.
Good morning, Kathleen O. Sherry KB in Northern California, very grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Thank you so much for your service, Kathleen, and everybody on the line, and welcome newcomers. And this is great. I mean, I love that we're breaking down. This is one of my favorite paragraphs in the doctor's opinion. So the fact that we're doing it by a couple of sentences is just, it's marvelous. You know what kept jumping out at me are some of the words, essentially, elusive, injurious, differentiate, false. And what I looked up was elusive, and elusive means hard to understand, define, grasp, isolate, or pin down. And so, you know, this to me is reminding me of the mental twist of my disease, because in the mental blank spot as well, because, you know, part of me knows that it will injure me if I eat my alcoholic foods. But when I'm in my disease, I don't care. It's like there's a blank spot there, and I don't care, and I've lost a memory. It's like I have a loss of memory that how bad this affects me and what it does to me. The only thing I can think of is it gives me ease and comfort, and I hate to get into the other sentence because we're not there yet, so I'm trying not to do that. But that's what it really struck me today, is that I can't tell the difference that, you know, once I'm in my disease, that it is hurting me. It's usually either after it, the fact, you know, when I've, whatever's happened with the weight gain and feeling terrible and all that stuff. But while I'm in it, I don't care. I don't care. I'm totally in my disease when this happens. And, you know, and I just had this memory flash of when I was a little kid, because everybody's kind of been talking about when they were kids. You know, I grew up in an alcoholic home. I had also a rageaholic father, and none of us kids wanted to ride in the car with him because we were afraid of him. But guess what? I did, because we used to drive down to the post office when I was a little kid late at night in Atlanta, And the junior in the varsity, which was a big deal place for me when I was a kid, had ice cream there. And, you know, I would risk my life going down with a razor all the way downtown just so I could go get an ice cream. Tell me how injurious that is. And what I went to, any lengths to get that. You know, I put my life in danger for it. You know, and I've done that all my life. I've put my life in danger due to this illness. And I didn't realize it because I didn't take it as seriously as I should have. And so it has been very dangerous for me. And I'm so grateful that I see that today. And when I'm in my disease, I can't see that. And the only way out is my higher power in these steps. And I pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Sherry KB. So Joanne B., you're up next, followed by Rita S. And if you could both take about 2.5 minutes, we should finish on time. So go ahead, Joanne B. Star one to unmute, Joanne. Okay, maybe we've lost Joanne B. So Rita S., you want to go ahead?
Joanne B.'s here. Yep. Hi.
Okay, go ahead. Okay, Rita, sorry, Joanne came on. So go ahead, Joanne B., if you could take just about 2 minutes.
2 minutes. Okay, thank you. This is Joanne B. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Texas. And these two sentences always throw me. And it's amazing how I'm so glad we're here because I over my recovery time, every time I read it, I hear something new. And it's wonderful to listen to everyone. And as I was listening, I was seeing myself walking home from school as a young girl and the joy on my face because I would get to go home and have that peanut butter and jelly sandwich and watch my favorite program and the wishing that I could have more. And my mother limited our food, and so that was very difficult for me. But as I grew, as I've grown up, you know, I would see myself following, I don't know what little program it was, but Buffy, one of the little girls was Buffy, and there's a little boy with curly red hair in this program, and how they would eat this buttered bread with sugar on it, and how I always wanted more and more of that. And then later, as I became an adult, it was the more food and the more sleep, and I still had to limit my food because of financial reasons. So, but the sleep I never had to limit. So when I would overeat, I would turn to sleep, and when I would oversleep, I would turn back to eating because of that guilt, and I'd want that calmness. But it was a vicious cycle. And it wasn't until I didn't diet very much. I did have some of that. But because I saw that it didn't do any good, and so I just gave up on it. But I really could not tell the difference. I could not tell that how it was hurting me. And when I came into program back in 2017, and that the weight started coming off. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I'll hurry. The weight started coming off. I realized I couldn't even tell that I was so overweight. I never saw it until I came in program. So I'm so grateful for this program and for all of you. Thank you so much, and I pass.
And thank you, Joanne B. So Rita S., if you could do like maybe a minute and a half, that would be great.
Okay. Hi, it's Rita S. Can I be heard?
Yes.
Hi. Welcome to the newcomer, and I just love those two sentences because it really, those were such pivotal sentences for me that helped me understand why I was eating. And I remember very specifically there was one time where I was really struggling with the food, and in the morning I had a very big argument with my partner, and I left the house, I had my abstinent breakfast with me, and I pulled into my coffee shop, my drive-thru coffee shop, and there was a row of pastries there. And I remember thinking, oh, I'm so hungry. Maybe I'll just have a savory scone. And it occurred to me that my abstinent breakfast was sitting next to me. And I did that whole thing like, oh, should I eat that? Should I eat my breakfast? Should I buy a scone? You know, back and forth. And that's when that sentence, men and women eat, you know, essentially for the effect, it just came, God just threw that in my head. And I realized, oh my gosh, this is what they mean. If I'm really hungry, I'll just eat my absolute breakfast. And clearly, I was chasing an effect. And it was just like this epiphany that I had. And I was able to stop the craving at that point. I went ahead and pulled over, had my breakfast, and then made a call to a newcomer. And when I was done with that call, the obsession was lifted. So it's just an amazing sense. So anyway, thank you. I think I've made my point. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Rita S. Sorry to cut you short there. Okay. Thank you, everyone this morning who shared. Great shares this morning. A special thanks to our readers who were Mariana D., Cecilia H., Pia S., Julie E.B., and Jordan L. And we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So, Julie E.B., will you please read a vision for you?
This is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered in Colorado. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then.